Hello and welcome to Super Respectable episode number, I have no idea, 33.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
Hey, my name is David Lewis and my co-host, ready and bright and, what did they say, bushy-tailed, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed? I don't know the expression. Toshio, yeah. Roman, how are you?
I'm good. Yeah, 33, Dave. That's, it's almost 8 months, which is crazy. Of every week except for in
December. I'm just rambling.
Yeah.
Thanks to our loyal listeners for sticking with us.
I think scientists will look back at us, just study us and be like, what the hell were they doing?
What were they thinking?
But
I have to say we have some very loyal and dedicated listeners around the globe, and totally. We're very thankful for all of you tuning in,
totally.
Wherever you are, however you do it. Oh, for whatever reason you do it, thank you very much for participating in this experiment.
Experiment. There you go. That's a good way. How's it going? How are you doing in this ever-ending nightmare of COVID and life and isolation?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit worse right now, just because across the water, the UK, they've opened up recently.
Yeah, yeah.
They're having parties in the pubs and people are going shopping and doing all these fun things while we're struggling here. So that's kind of, it's a fun time actually, because different parts of the world are opening up at different times. There's the vaccine inequalities that are being exposed here.
Do you think though that the UK, like, do you think in 2 weeks when we do an episode 35, we're going to be like, oh, remember back 2 weeks ago, the UK thought they were great and now they're in their like fourth lockdown or something? Do you think maybe like the planning of not to say who's in lockdown, who's out of lockdown, but like I feel like we're very black or white. It's either like we got the vaccine, we're good to go, or we're like complete lockdown, there's no middle ground and stuff. I think there should be transitions between places, like I don't know, I feel like it's strange that way. Like, I understand different countries are different places, and I'm trying to communicate what I want to say here, but like, shouldn't there be more of a plan put in place? Like, I think that was a real downfall that hopefully we can fix for the next pandemic, that like things can be done smoothly and strategically, as opposed to like with a chicken with its head cut off kind of deal.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, like the UK, there's a lot of politics involved, obviously. So I guess there was some hoarding of vaccines and some nationalism involved. I don't know. I guess a lot of people in the UK got the AstraZeneca jab, which was based in the UK. So that's a part of it. I can't explain what's going on in Europe. You know, in the Netherlands, there's this Janssen. So it's a Johnson & Johnson vaccine. And I think that one's starting to get paused a little bit for various blood clot reasons. So I don't know what to say. Things will happen when they happen. And I just, you know, I'm very eager to get that thing into my arm.
Yeah.
Whatever it is.
Which one are you hoping to get? Do you have a preference?
I don't remember. I think Pfizer has good reviews. There has to be like a star system of reviews.
Google,
I think,
review.
Pfizer's pretty good. Sinovac is questionable. I don't want the Russian one.
Yeah.
Do you have a preference?
I don't specifically. I mean, I probably go for like Pfizer or Johnson & Johnson when it becomes available. But I was just thinking, like, do you think we're going to get to a world where like there's going to be like drug dealers who like open their coat and there's like...
Yeah.
yeah, I mean, here I signed my parents up for the vaccine schedule system. So like when it's their time, they'll contact them. Yeah, my wife is pregnant, so she can't get it. I think I'll get it at the end once everything's like good to go. So I'm okay. Like I said, wearing a mask, it's not a big deal for me. But yeah, I don't know. I just read that on the news yesterday. They're talking about how AstraZeneca in Canada, someone has gotten blood clots from AstraZeneca. So that was like the first one, or one of the first ones here. So I don't know. Like it's, I really haven't paid a lot of attention to it. It's not even my time, even if I wanted it anyways. Right. But, I guess whichever one is available, and if the reviews on Google are good, then
go on Yelp and check it out.
It's going, but like we said, we're not in a great situation. You're not in a great situation. I think some of the countries in the world are doing really horribly as well. I was just reading the news about Turkey, and like it's like 55,000 cases a day now. It's like worst ever.
Wow.
Worst before, the worst numbers since the pandemic started. And so yeah, I hope the UK and the US, I know they're doing really well with vaccines, but I hope they're also like, it doesn't go back, it doesn't dip again. Like I hope they're actually on an upward trajectory.
Yeah, I mean, from what I've seen, the numbers look pretty good in those countries. And now Canada looks comparatively quite bad compared to the US. So the smugness has dropped from the last year for, haha, we're doing so much better. And then now it's tables have turned a little bit.
Did you, we were watching the news last night and just kind of on a tangent, and like Kamala Harris was on the news, and I was like, oh yeah, she is vice president of America. And I'm like, I wonder what she and Biden have been doing the last 2 months. And then my mom's like, well, they must have been doing a good job because they're just focusing on their news, they're focusing on the work. They're not on the news every day. And I'm like,
because you don't hear about them. Yeah.
But
I mean, we could probably do a post election early administration episode at some point.
I don't know what they've been doing, man, but because
I'm pretty impressed. I was writing Biden off before he even started, but he seems to have put in a pretty good team in place. I particularly like Mr. Buttigieg, can't say his name, in transport.
Yeah, transport.
Buttigieg.
Yeah.
So he fits my criteria for what a transport secretary should be doing. He's all about upgrading infrastructure, cycling, communities, blah blah blah. So I think he's an old guy, Biden, but he's got a nice young dynamic team working for him, and he's doing the right thing. He's just sitting over top of it and manning the ship and taking it easy.
Yeah, I mean, I bet you if they did like a comparison of Trump's 4 years versus Biden's first 2 months, Biden's 2 months was probably more successful than Trump's entire term. So like, yeah. Well,
it depends who's judging, I guess. If you asked MAGA country, they'd say he's very successful.
Yeah, I mean, where is Trump now? Like, what's his deal? Like, what's he doing? And nobody knows. Is he...
he's golfing. I think he's at Mar-a-Lago having a good time.
Oh, okay.
He emceed a few weddings there, I think.
Oh, really?
You should check out the clip, yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Oh, that's what he does part time now. He's a by the hour MC.
Apparently, he was emceeing the wedding and then
at his golf
club. He just went into a big tangent about what an injustice it was that he lost and that sort of thing.
I wonder who goes to. Do you think it's just all like Trump supporters and like Trump people who go to Mar-a-Lago who are members at his club? Or do you think it's the people like from the left as well? Or like, it's a golf club, isn't it?
Country club, golf club, a place to schmooze and mingle and network with the great and the good, as they say.
The great and the good, like the Jeffrey Epstein type. Is that what it is? That's where everyone kind of hangs out?
I don't want to get sued for anything for libel. What are the laws? By the way, we should look into that as podcasters. We're broadcasting from the Netherlands and Canada. And different countries have very different libel laws. I don't know what the rules are on podcasting.
And most of our listeners are in India. So let's follow the laws of India. I think that's...
Yeah. I'm sure we can argue various jurisdictions. So we'll try not to offend too many people here.
So I keep looking at my... Like, sorry, I have like a... For people watching, I have like a sunburn. I keep looking at it and I'm like, is that the sun on like the reflection? But it looks really like prevalent, huh? It's okay.
Okay. Next time we're going to turn the video off for our recording for the benefit of our audio listeners.
I'll do the makeup. I'll put makeup on before I come on. Anyways, okay. I'm just messing with you.
We have faces for radio people.
There you go.
It's your week. So it's my week. As you may or may not know, mm-hmm. Prince Philip passed away.
Yeah, I heard.
Very sadly. So condolences to the Windsor, the House of Windsor. I don't really know, but I'm very sorry to hear that. But it was 99. He lived a good life.
He lived a great life. I told who was I telling? I told my wife. I'm like, this guy really got it made in life, man. He did jack shit for X amount of years before. I know he did a lot until he got married, but after he got married, he really lived it up. Just doing.
Do you know much about the lineage and his background?
Dave, that's all I do in life. I just follow the royal family up.
You watch the Crown, right?
That's my that's the mystery. I know a little bit of it, but from the Crown, I know some of it. But I'd be fascinated to learn more because I think his history is actually pretty unique. Because his parents were Nazis, weren't they? Or Nazi supporters, or something weird, right? Like,
I'm not sure. I think he. I'm quite embarrassed to say I don't know that much about him. But I think there's some Greek, there's some German, there's some mix of things.
Yeah.
He's a hybrid, but he's definitely from royal.
He's from royal
European
blood.
Royal yes. blood somewhere.
Yeah.
But my ignorance will go into deeper depth if I start talking any more about his background. So
yeah, but you're asking. You shouldn't feel bad that you don't know, because like he's not the primary character. He's not the protagonist in all the stories, right? Like he's married to the protagonist. So like if you like most people know a lot about the queen, or maybe somewhat about the queen, but like before the crown, I don't think a lot of people knew anything about Prince Philip, generally speaking, other than the fact that he's married to the queen and how come he's not a king? Like that was the question.
Yeah, I mean, the main stuff I knew about him was that he said a lot of offensive things when he went out on his trips around the world, which I found kind of entertaining, but it's, I guess, not politically correct these days. I don't think it ever was what he said, but there's a whole, you probably buy a whole book of the offensive things he said to various peoples that he was presiding over in his official capacity. I don't necessarily want to talk specifically about Prince Philip, although that could be another episode, given all the fun things he said.
Sure.
I want to talk about the concept of cargo cults.
Okay.
Have you heard of this?
No, I have not. Now, something I do not know about.
Okay, so there's a Prince Philip connection. There's something called the Prince Philip Movement.
Okay.
And that is considered, I believe, an offshoot of a cargo cult.
Okay.
I have a whole bunch of notes, which I'll try not to too awkwardly refer to here.
Sure.
But it's a type of cult, and it's mainly found in the South Pacific. I think pretty much all of the examples of cargo cults that I read about are in the South Pacific.
Mm-hmm.
And its followers, they believe that by performing certain rituals, it'll bring about a technologically advanced society to appear and deliver material goods and material wealth to them.
Okay.
Okay, so there's a few examples of cargo cults in the late 19th and early 20th century, but it's something that really took off during World War II.
Okay.
So that's when the war in the Pacific was raging between mainly Japan and the United States. And I don't know how much detail you know about the war in the Pacific, but like they really fought in like island to island, little specks of land. And really fighting over little tiny bits of land. Very remote, very isolated communities were exposed to the world's powers in a way that they've never ever previously seen before.
Yeah.
So these were very isolated and very, I don't know what to say. I don't think the right word is primitive anymore. You'd say pre-industrial island cultures, right?
Sure.
And they were confronted with things like huge military machinery, navies, armies, you know, super advanced for the time, right? And they're going right by their waters and coming to invade their little islands that had never seen anything on that scale before. So these armies would show up and they would establish little runways, or they'd have airdrops and airlifts
of
huge amounts of cargo to have staging grounds to wage their battles. And so that was another dynamic that was quite shocking to them, was they would appear on their island and they would bring supplies like clothing, medicine, canned food, and then huge array of military equipment. And this was just baffling to them, right?
Yeah.
If they had any kind of exposure to, let's say, white people, it would probably be in the form of anthropologists who were going there to basically study them.
Yeah.
And they would probably live amongst them for, you know, maybe weeks or months at a time.
Yeah.
And they would come with, you know, pen and paper and their own, like, camping gear, but nothing like, well, what these guys were bringing, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, that you can only imagine the shock that it would just, you know, make your head explode to see that kind of thing. They didn't have any concept of industrial manufacturing. And so they were like, okay, well, this stuff must have been created by God.
Yeah.
By some other being and deity.
Yeah.
And so when the war ended, so did the airdrops and the arrival of this cargo. So this kind of also led to a like aftershock for them. They're like, where'd they all go and what's happening?
Yeah,
now?
Yeah. Of course, I never thought about that.
So they had all this bounty, essentially. They became kind of materially wealthy during this time, although I'm sure a lot of them faced a lot of suffering because of bombs going off and mines and all the horrible nuclear stuff that happened afterwards.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they were left kind of bereft. Where's are all this stuff coming from and where did it go?
Yeah.
And so some of these more remote and isolated communities, there was a cults that were formed to kind of pray to bring back the bounty.
Oh, I get it. Yeah.
Right. So they would follow certain behaviors that they observed in the soldiers from largely the American soldiers. I don't think they followed the Japanese because from what I understand, the Japanese, they had very terrible relations with the local communities.
Oh, really?
And they didn't really want to emulate the Japanese. So from what I understand, it was mainly
Americans?
The American soldiers that they wanted to copy. So they dressed up in uniforms, they held parades, and they hoisted flags, the American flag.
Yeah.
This
is like post-war, right?
This post-war, I believe, yeah.
Okay.
So basically they were observing the soldiers' behaviors and they thought, this is what you have to do to get the cargo. What else? They would, I guess I shouldn't laugh, but this is kind of funny. They would learn the landing signals for the planes. So they would do things like do the landing wave and do the signals for the planes that were about to land. They would have the abandoned runway, so that's where they would do it.
Yeah.
And they would light up the runways with torches. And they constructed replica radios and headphones out of coconuts, wood, and straw.
Okay.
So they had the whole setup and the whole getup of a military base. They had a whole watchtower to look for arriving planes, which sadly never appeared again, but they would be there. They wouldn't give up. They were relentless.
Yeah.
And you can look all this stuff online. I think actually David Attenborough, a very young David Attenborough, did a profile of cargo cults, and you can check it out on YouTube. He's he goes there and he checks it out. So that's one thing for our viewers to check out.
Sure.
Our listeners to check out. And so this brings us to the Prince Philip connection.
Okay.
So there in Vanuatu, do you know Vanuatu? It's mm-hmm. Basically just off the coast of Papua New Guinea.
Yeah.
Very remote, very isolated, an island chain. And some of these sects were prevalent there. And one of them is the Prince Philip movement. So it's on an island that believes that Prince Philip is God. It's their God.
Okay.
And not their whole, not the whole island, but very remote communities in the island. I think in numbers in the hundreds, possibly thousands at its peak, believe that in Prince Philip as God.
Interesting.
So the story seems to have roots in a local ancient tale.
Okay.
Where the son of a mountain spirit traveled over the seas to a distant land where he married a powerful woman and would return to them one day.
Wow.
So can you see some of the connections already to Mr. Philip?
Yeah.
Vanuatu at the time, it was known as New Hebrides, I believe. It was a British colony.
Okay.
And so in the police precincts and in government buildings, there'd be pictures of the Queen and Prince Philip around the country.
Yeah.
And so some Vanuatans, I think that's the demonym of Vanuatu. I don't know.
I'll ask my friends from Vanuatu.
Yeah. They observed this. And the reverence with which the colonial officials held the queen and concluded that Prince Philip had to be this long lost son.
Yeah.
Right?
Wow. Yeah.
So they believe there's another element to this that is part of this story, this this ancient tale that they had.
Yeah.
They believe in peace, and they believed as the queen's husband, he was in a good position to bring about peace to the world. And so they had a lot of hope for this character, right?
Yeah.
And so if he was successful, he would come back to their island to live with them.
Yeah.
After he had achieved his mission of bringing peace to the world.
Yeah.
But sadly, according to these locals, they were just dismayed at white people's stupidity, jealousy, never-ending fighting. This was preventing them, Prince Philip, from achieving his mission and returning to the island. But his status as a god was solidified and cemented when he and the queen visited Vanuatu. They came in 1974.
Oh.
And there was an event. Yeah, there was an event at the Vanuatu capital. I think it's Port Vila.
Okay.
And he gave a pig to a resident of Tana, which is the island where the Prince Philip movement is based. And this blew their minds. They're like, this is incredible. Our God gave us a pig, and that's fantastic.
Did Prince Philip know of his status from the locals on the island?
So from what I read, apparently when he visited, he didn't know.
He didn't know.
Or they upheld his ignorance. They decided not to tell him.
Yeah.
But at a certain point, a few years later, so they visited in 1974. And I think around 1978, the ambassador or whoever it was, the representative, in Vanuatu just couldn't hold it in any longer and spilled the beans.
Yeah.
So he asked for an official photograph of Prince Philip and the Queen to be sent to the sect. So he made an official request to Buckingham Palace for them to send like a nice framed portrait, I think maybe signed or something like that, to be sent to the villagers.
And so it's worth it.
And he agreed. He said, yeah, let's do that. And again, this was very well received in the village, and they reciprocated by sending him a pig killing club.
Oh,
to beat up pigs.
Yeah.
And they had their own request and said, "Can you take a photograph holding this and send it back to us, just as proof that you got it?
Tell me you did it."
He did it. There's a photograph.
Oh my god! Okay, cool.
But I know he's made fun of a lot for his jokes and making light of various cultures, but he was very respectful and very serious in his correspondence and communications with this Prince Philip movement.
Yeah.
So by then, obviously, he was aware of his status, and I guess he maybe got a kick out of it privately, but in public and in his correspondence with them, he was very respectful. And he took the photo, and they sent it back to them, and they were very, very happy.
Yeah, I saw the photo here. It's crazy.
So he was posing with it. It was taken outside of Buckingham Palace, so on the grounds. So quite a location for that.
That's insane. Okay, yeah.
And then in 2007, you might find this hard to believe.
Yeah.
Several members of the Prince Philip movement were flown to the UK for an audience with their god.
What? From Buckingham Palace as an act of...
So they went, they were flown to the UK and they met him at Windsor Castle.
Wow.
That's also something you can look up. There's a clip of these guys going to meet Prince Philip. So I think they had the meeting was held behind closed doors, but they had like the before and after.
Yeah.
And they gave him gifts. And they reportedly asked Prince Philip, "When are you coming back? Like, what's the deal, man? Like, you're our god. You should be coming back," because the belief is that he is not British.
Yeah, yeah.
They believe that he was their, you know, a son of their island, and he was due to come back according to their tale.
Yeah.
So he wasn't like, something wasn't right. Like, they're like, "Why are you staying where you are? You've done your job. Come back home."
Yeah, yeah.
And he said something very cryptic to them to kind of like not offend them and also not commit to any kind of response, which I'm sure is something that the royal family practices a lot.
Yeah. What did he say?
So that's quite,
you don't know?
Quite something.
Do you know?
I'm sorry?
Do you know what he said?
He did say something. I have to look it up. I didn't write it down.
Okay,
no problem. He said something very, very...
very political, not left, not right.
Very political, yeah. Not left, not right.
Not decided.
Neither here nor there.
Yeah, yeah.
But it satisfied them. They weren't offended. They were kind of happy with his answer.
So I wonder, like, so they flew them. First of all, like, I wonder if it's a private plane or business class or economy. Yeah, I wonder the flights from Vanuatu to London, if there's, like, a direct British Airways flight. But
no, definitely not.
But do you know how many people came? Like, was it probably, like, it was probably their chief? And
Five.
Five, like the higher ups, right?
No, apparently...
just every
it
day.
Was not the top, but it was five people who were senior in that island, but not the, there's like the big men culture. So it wasn't like the top guy who came. I think he was too old at that point.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. So they went back and reported the good news, and they were treated as heroes. So yeah, and of course Prince Philip passed away last week,
yeah.
And now there's a lot of stories you can read about. They had to communicate to this Prince Philip movement, the group of individuals there, to let them know that he died.
Yeah.
So news has reached that island, and there's now a period of mourning underway in the island of Tanna, where he is revered. So this will include a number of events, like a procession, a display of all his memorabilia that he sent over the years and they've collected.
Yeah.
They will kill several pigs in his honor.
Yeah.
And last but not least, they will hold a ceremonial kava drinking session.
Oh.
Do you know about kava?
No, tell me. Is this booze?
So I've been to Fiji, and it's quite a common thing to across the South Pacific Islands. So I've consumed kava.
Yeah.
And it's a very special thing to be take part in a kava drinking ceremony.
Okay.
And I probably shouldn't have consumed it, nor should my sisters. I was 12.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, we were young, and it has like slightly mind altering properties.
Okay.
It's consumed like a tea. So they boil it, and it's like a kava,
like a leaf root, or something. I believe. Yeah. Oh, okay.
A
leaf
or root, and it kind of makes you feel relaxed. And some of the people on the island in Fiji where we stayed, I asked them, like, how much of this stuff do you drink when you drink it? They're like, we'll have like 6 or 7, 10 bowls of the stuff, and like you'll really get lightheaded and a funny feeling. It's like not like something. You wouldn't hallucinate, no. You just get kind of calm feeling.
Okay.
But it's a very special thing to consume. So they have a kava drinking session.
Yeah.
And now they need to discuss what comes next. Like,
who's the next?
Is Prince Charles as you know, next in line to the throne? Will he take up the mantle as the next prince? The god of Ireland, and from what I understand, they said Prince Philip will always be like our spiritual leader, but possibly Prince Charles will be like the physical embodiment of the story from now on. But I think Prince Philip will always have a special place in their hearts, and I'm not sure if Prince Charles has commented on the situation yet, but we'll see. The period of mourning has yet to be played out, so I think it's something for another time to discuss what comes next for these people.
That's crazy. We're talking geographically the South Pacific, Micronesia, Polynesia, like between Asia and North America over the Pacific, like that region for most of these cargo cults.
It's mainly Melanesia, so like the island chain off of Papua New Guinea.
Yeah.
Very remote and very, very hard to get to. So, So the characteristics for these cargo cults, obviously it wouldn't be in the capital of these places. So kind they have too many interactions with the outside world. But these are very remote and hard to reach communities.
yeah.
Yeah.
And you had said it's because of during the war that because of the close fighting between the Allies and axis, they were just going from island to island. That's when all these places were discovered. Is that it? Like to the outside world?
Yeah, and I'm not sure what the stats are, but there's still a fair amount of like undiscovered peoples around the world, as far as I know.
I think it's I've Googled it before. I think it's dwindling, but there are still islands where people do not want outside civilization. And there's even an island, I think, in Sri Lanka. I'll send it to you, where like if you go close enough, you can see people like who throw their weapons and
Yeah,
stuff. Yeah.
they killed that American missionary. He kept trying to like go over and
Yeah.
convert them, and which you know, the key risk for them is like they'll probably get sick and
Die of some
they got no
curable disease.
immunity from outsiders. So, and they had very bad experience with outsiders coming and interacting with them. So
Yeah.
that's definitely something for another super respectable episode, because the story in that island is quite something. But
Yeah.
yeah, for sure.
The Prince Philip thing, was there an episode of The Crown where they talked about this?
I think maybe there is a small reference, like a few seconds, where they covered it.
Okay.
And there's an episode where
They
it was
visited
about their around the world trip.
him and his friend. On
Or
the
maybe I'm
five.
mixing up the Prince Charles and Diana trip, but
No, you're not. The first, I remember it too. The first or second season, his secretary is his friend who's kind of like a douchebag, right? And he's like always cheating on his wife and stuff like that. And so I think in that same episode, he has to fire his best friend because of his infidelities. But he did visit a bunch of islands. I don't know if this is one of them, but I remember that trip that he had to go. He had to leave his wife for like 5 months or 6 months to go on this global world trip. But that's fascinating. That's really, really interesting that these people and have this connection with Prince Philip in the middle of nowhere. Because I thought it would have
And
been
apparently
that.
what makes it worse, or it compounds it,
Yeah.
is that now like the world's media is onto it, and they think it's a fascinating story. So they'll keep trying to like bug these people and
Oh.
go there and write stories about it,
Yeah.
which only makes it solidifies it even more that's their god, because people keep
Yeah.
coming and bringing news and stories about it. And yeah, I think that only makes it more. So like there's this documentary called An Idiot Abroad. I don't know if you've seen that before, but it's
Is
pretty
it
hilarious. I recommend it.
the Ricky Gervais? No.
Yeah, so it's one of
Yeah.
Ricky Gervais's friends, or I don't know if I would call him his friend because Ricky seems to bully him a lot, but Carl Pilkington.
Yeah.
And he goes to meet this group of people who are worshipping Prince Philip. So that's
Yeah.
also something to look up. Yeah, and from what I've seen, actually, they're not too far from the airstrip. Like you can like
Walk
it's an
there.
island chain, which is quite remote, but I
Yeah.
think it's very much their choice to, you know, keep this belief up. They probably are aware by now of all the different creature comforts that exist in the world, but
Yeah.
they're based on like their ancient stories and indigenous tales. This they stick with it.
It must be so weird to have like your own insulated community for so long, and then suddenly you see like in back in during the war or whatever, you see like warships and soldiers and like all this stuff you could have never kind of fathomed, and then like they come into your island and then they just leave, and then you're just like, what the hell? Like, what's happening? You know, like just from a mental psychological point of view, it must be so weird, right? If you and I suddenly saw something we'd never seen before, it couldn't even think of, and then it just appeared, we'd be thinking about it for the rest of our lives, wouldn't it? We'd be like, remember that time that thing in the sky was like showed up and then it just disappeared? Like, that's weird, right?
Yeah, I've often thought about that, like time travel. I thought it'd be super cool to like go back even like what, 30, 40 years now.
Yeah.
No, let's go back even further, maybe 100 years, and
Yeah.
then start
30,
showing people
30,
iPad.
yeah.
Yeah,
iPads.
show people an iPad.
Yeah. When, yeah, totally spoiled their mind. You said 30 years. 30 years is pretty much the 80s, and that was kind of like a, like, yeah.
But yeah, but it's funny, like you look at all these things of what they thought the year 2000 would be like. Even in like the 80s, they probably still thought that there'd be like flying ships
Flying
by
cars and
then.
stuff. Yeah.
Everyone had this idea that the year 2000, this crazy stuff would happen, but nothing
Yeah.
really changed.
We're still, that's a very good point. There are no flying ships yet, so someone has not succeeded.
Someone's not doing their job, but Elon Musk is working on something.
So, going back to Prince Philip a little bit, is that So we kind of touched on this thing that I believe, like, so he did come from royalty, but, you know, at the beginning, I wasn't joking. Like, I think part of his family were Nazi supporters, weren't they? Like, they were German. Like, that's why they had to, like, his uncle, Mountbatten, or what's his name? Something Batten. He was a supporter of the British family, the royal family, I think. And then his parents and his sisters and everyone were, like, Nazi guys. So I think he took control or custody of his nephew, or so he was responsible for my, I'm butchering my history, but he brought him over to the UK, didn't he? Like, didn't this kid have to be separated from his parents because of what was happening? And then his mother was like mentally ill or something, and then she had to go to Greece. She went back to Greece, which was her background, and she went into like a nunnery or something. Like, do you know this?
Yeah, that rings bells. But like I said, my education on that aspect of his life comes from the Crown. So it's very basic and very limited. So I don't want to pollute anyone's brains by having me speak on the subject.
I'll do it. No problem. No, I don't either. I was always fascinated by the fact that, like, you know, I think he was a soldier. We can agree, right? He was in the army. That's very, like, he was in the Navy.
I can just say anything. Just...
So he was in the Navy because in the very first episode when they get married, he has to leave the Navy. Or you see,
because... This brings me to another point, because in Canada, since we're still ruled head of state, is the Queen.
Yeah.
We're not, as you can see, dear listeners, we're not educated in the slightest on our head of state and the history of the royal family.
Totally.
And I don't recall there being anything on the subject in school. So I'm not a royalist. I think if you're going to have a royal family ruling over us, you should like teach us something about it. And not just,
we should get a royalist on the show. They can walk.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's not talk about facts because we don't know about it. Okay. once he became, what are his duties as prince of husband to the queen? Like, I guess he's a figurehead, and he's a representative of the firm, just like everyone else. Right.
Yeah. That was one of his frustrations. In signing up to the marriage to the queen, he had to, you know, give up a lot of his independence and just go along with these tours and smile and nod politely. And on many occasions he didn't do that. He said very interesting things.
Well, I think if you watch the four seasons of The Crown, you'll see that that was the case in the first like season, two seasons. And then once he kind of like adjust, he just kind of like lives it up. He just doesn't do anything anymore. He kind of like wears his suits, walks his grounds, plays his polo. Like, he does just like rich man stuff, right? Like like no job. Like, I wonder like if they could ever just work too, like normal people, or no, like they just kind of, I kind of felt like he was in a position that he could have done more things, but like he just kind of had to support his wife. Well, there's not, of course, nothing wrong with that. I mean, supporting spouses is great. Women do it for their men, I guess, most of the time, which is, it's shifting with him. But like, I kind of felt like he just kind of wasted a lot of time. Like, did he not? Like, I don't know what he was doing the whole time.
Well, no, I mean, he was doing his thing, you know, he was going around and accompanying his wife on the various duties. And he was going around the UK and, you know, supporting and giving morale boosts to various groups and charities and whatnot.
Yeah.
That's generally speaking what any member of the royal household does, with the exception, I think, of Prince Andrew, who does other things.
Yes. But how come he was not made a king? Do you know why? Or is it not because his wife is just it's the hereditary line that he's just a prince? Because they made him a prince too, didn't they? Like, he wasn't, like, he was something else before.
Yep, I'm just going to smile and nod as I cannot contribute anything of substance to that question.
Okay.
So no problem. We should probably skip topics.
No problem, no problem. Okay, what, some of these islands now, these cargo islands, do you think any of these places have gone back to their original status or no? Once they've been kind of, they've seen the outside world, even though it's been like 80 years since World War II or whatever, like they're more modernized. They must be more modernized. Like, people, missionaries, the heads of, like, they're. I see you said they were little islands in bigger countries. People, like governments, they must have come into these places at this point and just given them basics, right?
Yeah, I imagine the development has happened, but on a very small scale.
Yeah.
I can't imagine they have in broadband internet access in these communities. Even, I don't know, running water and potable water is probably a challenge in some of these areas too.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I was in Fiji in 1997, and Fiji is relatively well developed compared to some of these other island nations.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's just a challenge. I mean, this is the most remote island chains in the world, and just getting supplies, you know, we kind of talked about it a couple of episodes ago when Steve Tomosk was on about how what a challenge it is to bring things like fresh fruits and vegetables up to the northern Canada or even northern Ontario.
Sure.
And how much it costs and how expensive it is, because they're not densely populated and heavily populated places either.
Yeah.
And they're not in the big shipping routes. So there's a whole bunch of other factors that limits the ability to trade and expand and grow from a capitalist perspective.
I'm assuming they're mostly agricultural based societies, right? They grow their own stuff probably, or they used to before the outside world came in. They probably,
I think even on that count, they're still quite hunter-gatherer in some respects. They don't have set crops that I think that they're growing every season.
But they used to be self-reliant on one another, on themselves, right?
I think there's very much self-reliance there. Yeah.
Do you think COVID has hit some of these communities, or like, do you think being isolated is actually like a benefit in terms of?
It's probably all right for them. Social distancing and isolation is that's where a key benefit is right now. I don't know what the numbers are like in these island chains, but. Yeah, they're probably happy not to have any visitors at this point in time.
My mom went to some of the smaller islands off the coast of Australia, which is like, I think you're talking a little bit more left, but like, you know, like Tongo and like Taboot, I forgot the names and stuff. But like, I think they're a little bit more commercialized and stuff. And so like Fiji, but she was saying that it was really fascinating to go there, and it was a very different way of life. I'd like to go.
You haven't been? To these countries, yeah.
But I'd like to if I had the opportunity.
It's just tough. I mean, the journey getting there is a real challenge. We went on this very cool trip in '97. So it was Hawaii, then to Fiji. And I just remember going from in Fiji, you'd go to like Suva, the capital.
Yeah.
And then there's like tons and tons of different little islands, and to get on the plane that we took to get to this island where we stayed for a week, we had to be weighed. They had to, you know, check our weight and luggage and everything
for the plane.
And for the plane, because you didn't want to have it off balance. And I was like, well, I've never been on a plane where you had to check that sort of thing before. And we just fly at not a huge altitude. And so it was at a level where you could just see all these little communities just dotted around the islands. And I'm like, wow, this is just mind blowing how people live in different parts of the world. And then from there, the journey had just started. We landed in another island. They would take another plane, then another boat.
Yeah.
And by then we weren't even that far off from like the main islands, and there were still further places you could go. So
why'd you guys go, just for holiday?
Holiday. Yeah. Yeah.
So your dad was like, let's go.
No, well, we were on our way to New Zealand because my dad took up a gig for, it was meant to be for a year to work at a hospital in New Zealand. So why not stop off in some very nice places along the way?
Yeah.
So that's why we went.
Did you live in New Zealand then for a year?
It was meant to be for a year, but I don't know how long it was in the end. I think a month or two, but we had to cut it short. Yeah, Federica, my girlfriend, she worked in New Zealand for a couple of years.
Wow.
And she had the great fortune to travel to some of these places. I believe she's been to Vanuatu.
Okay.
She hasn't met this Prince Philip movement group, but she has gone to see some of these remote communities, and it's quite something.
Huh. It's just really fascinating stuff. I think we actually went to Hawaii in Australia in '98, so like kind of similar, but like maybe we met each other at the airport in passing if it was December 31st, January 1st. It really is like, once you're traveling to that part of the world, it really is like just the middle of nowhere, isn't it? it's just like ocean and then like little islands and little places. And it's strange to think people live there, but because we're, I guess where we live is so physically, in terms of geography, connected. A lot of that part is just like little islands, and there's places and there's people there. And some of these people just want to be left alone. And I guess they've survived for this many years, so they don't really need us anymore, right? But
Yeah, I think for the most part, they're happy. But they did like the material goods that arrived, from what I understand, which is why they formed these cults.
Yeah.
But it also got me thinking of this very funny story of the Yucatan Peninsula.
Okay.
So it's a meeting of the conquistadors and the Spanish in the Americas. And of course, it's a very terrible history behind that, but this is a more a lighthearted element to it, if that's possible.
Sure.
But it's like these, how do these people interact? Like, how do they communicate?
Is
the big question I have. And like, how did that go down? And so apparently, the Yucatan Peninsula in Mexico, when they arrived there, the Spanish were like, okay, what is this place? They asked some locals and they responded and they said, Yucatan.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay, we're in Yucatan. And Yucatan means I have no idea what you're saying. whether that's true or not, I don't know, but according to my trusty Wikipedia sources, that's hasn't been totally debunked yet. And our very own Canada,
of course. I was just gonna say that. Yeah,
there's I don't know if you remember those heritage minutes. I think it's very popular with us Canadians. They have these heritage moments
on like CBC or whatever, CTV.
We were brainwashed with growing up. I think they've updated them.
Yeah,
and they would kind of force feed us little bits of history, heritage Canada history.
Yeah,
and one of them was of, I think it was the French arriving in Canada.
Yeah,
and they'd say, "Where are we?" And what's that? And they're like, "Oh, that's our that's our village called Canada." And they're like, "Okay, the whole country is called Canada."
I totally know what you're talking about. There's like low budget government of Canada infomercials that were like 30 seconds long, and like actors were like, you know, they didn't know their lines properly, and there was like low production value. You could tell it's like a very Canadian thing. It's so funny. Just on a side note, so like my wife is from Morocco originally, and so we moved here, so she's getting like, you know, she's been to Canada before twice, but now we're living here, right? So like, I've been like, kind of like showing her like different aspects of life and like, look, oh, that's very, you know, this is like, so whenever we watch like Canadian television, I'm like, this is like what Canadian television is like the CBC. And she's like picked up on the fact that CBC is like much different than like other channels. So it's like very Canadian. And yesterday they were interviewing like on the CBC National, which is like the 1 hour nightly news. They had like a whole like 10 minute piece on like the last show of Kim's Convenience or something like that. Because the show is ending abruptly, and she's like, "This is news for you guys." Like, I'm like, "Yeah,
what a great country."
That's totally it. Like, it's. I was just thinking, like, I wonder what it was like when, like, the indigenous faced like the first people who came to this country, and like, how did communication work? What are all the things? Because in the history books, we learn that was like they gloss over that part of it. They're just like, "Oh, they came, and then boom." Like, but what about that boom transition period? Like, they always mention a little bit of good, right? They're like, oh, they brought medicines. Oh, and they brought like new technologies. Ooh. Mm. And then it's like, then what happened? And then boom.
Yeah. Right? Because like, how do you convey, if you have them, peaceful intentions? Because I'm sure like if you're faced with someone who's showing up in a huge boat, gunship and all sorts of things, they probably don't have peaceful intentions. But like some American soldiers were like, don't worry, we're cool. We just want to like hang out in your space for a little bit.
Yeah.
And, you know, just play along while we move from island to island.
Yeah.
And so I guess from that perspective, it was okay. But others are like, okay, missionaries, there's a whole weird angle to that. But some of these anthropologists who just want to come and spend time with them.
Yeah.
They have a challenge of trying to say to them, because there's so many different languages spoken in these communities. How do you go about and say, please don't kill me, first of all, and I don't want to kill you. I just want to hang out.
That's primary.
Yeah. You have to, like, I guess it's a universal, right? A hand gesture, like, I come in peace.
Yeah.
Hands in the air.
Yeah. I mean, Google Translate obviously didn't exist then, or maybe it doesn't even have all the languages now. But Yeah, that's crazy. I actually, it's so funny you mentioned that. I was watching this miniseries the other day on Amazon Prime called The Stand, based on Stephen King's book, The Stand. And first of all, Stephen King is whack, man. I don't know how he comes up with such weird ideas that are just so creepy. But anyways, have you read the book or seen the series, or you know what it's about?
No.
It's pretty much about good and evil. It's the end of the world, and like a group of people end up on a good side and a group of people end up on the bad side, and it's a battle between the two. It's like kind of end of day stuff. And then the leader of the bad side, who's not the devil himself, but very close to it, he gets outcast at the end. He loses, and he gets sent to pretty much like this remote area and community, like the islands we're talking about. And so when he comes up to the islands, they don't know what he is. They don't know what they're speaking. So they want to attack him, but he has a gun pretty much, and he kills one of them. And then they just pretty end up worshiping him because they're like, oh wow, who's this guy with like this technology, and he can do all this weird stuff. So it was funny you mentioned that it connected. But I wanted to say is that on another side note, there's a really cool, I've been reading these cool websites about some of these islands that were occupied during World War II by the different forces. And then after World War II, they've left. And so you have like a bunch of islands around the South Pacific where there's nobody living on them, but there's like infrastructure there in place, right? Like like a little bit of military artillery, like bunkers and all this and stuff. So you can go to some of these islands where there's like structures built, and now they're just isolated, which is kind of cool from a historical point of view, that like these islands were used for something and then now they're just sitting there.
Yeah, it's insane. I mean, the, I guess more tragic side to it is that in the Cold War, they were doing nuclear testing and just, yeah, you know, setting off the most destructive nuclear bombs and blowing up like beautiful, pristine island chains and, yeah, and the waters all around it. And I can only imagine the destruction and ecological devastation that these people faced. Yeah. Obviously, they were like forcibly relocated, and they didn't, I don't think they killed anybody, but it's just like kind of the leave them alone thing and let them get on with their lives rather than just like invade with our horrible weaponry and technology sometimes is probably not what they want.
I always thought it'd be cool to be an anthropologist or like an archaeologist, like Indiana Jones growing up, and like it probably is pretty cool, but like that'd be cool to figure out how they do communicate with new groups of people, like what the initial protocol is and stuff. I want to Google that after.
Do you know any anthropologists
For our show, so we can have someone else?
I'm thinking, I went to SOAS, which I believe produces anthropologists. So I'll have to check my Rolodex to see if there's any we could bring on as a guest.
Yeah, Dave, if you still have a Rolodex, I think it's you're living like back 50 years ago.
I think it's one of those things that should make a comeback. You know how record players made a comeback. There's a few manual analog things that's one of them.
I agree. I don't know any, but I'll look into it. But I got a couple things to Google this time. I'll Google the Rolodex.
Yeah, I don't think Carlton produced many anthropologists. That wasn't one of the programs, was it?
I don't know. I didn't take any classes. Did you?
I remember there's a lot of people doing sociology.
Yeah,
but I'm not sure what that is.
I was like, those idiots. Political science is the way to go.
Yeah, that's where it's at. A much more meaty subject.
Yeah. In 21 years, my friend and I will have a podcast where we can talk about the death of a prince with political science.
Yeah, we'll show you. Talk about sociological subjects.
I'm going to send us some links and stuff. If you got some cool things from this episode, photos, this, that Prince Philip thing doesn't surprise me. I was pretty much like, yeah, that, when you told me, I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. Like, I don't know why, but I do know about Vanuatu as a country. I've never been, sure, I'll go. No problem. I'm assuming it's probably like beautiful, right? Sandy beaches, blue waters, like,
Yeah, it's not like one of the main tourist islands, like Tahiti and Fiji and the French one. I cannot remember the name.
French Polynesia.
French Polynesia.
Yeah.
I think Vanuatu is just too remote and too challenging for many reasons. But
is it still a British colony? Do you know?
No, they got independence, I believe, in 1980. So they're still part of the Commonwealth, like we are. But it's independent now. So
there you go.
Yeah.
And my final question is, what ended up happening to the pig that Prince Philip gave to the tribes? And do you think it's still alive or it's still roaming around?
I don't think so. I think the pigs are an important source of protein for those people. So they probably ate it.
Yeah. They saw, yeah. They killed it. Very cool.
Yeah.
Anyways, thanks for the episode. Very timely. Very very interesting. All these little things. I've definitely thought about it. I didn't know there was a name associated with these phenomena. So thanks for teaching me something today.
Yeah, it's getting a bit possibly in a few years it'll be politically incorrect, but for now I think we're okay.
Cargo cults, huh? Very cool. Anyways, David Lewis from the Netherlands, thank you so much.
Thank you to our listeners if you made it this far into the episode. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much, and wishing everyone good health and happiness and safety during this time.
Absolutely.
Bye-bye.
See you later.